Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Valspar Ultra starts at just $29.98 a gallon. So we've got you covered when your daughter wants to paint her room again after last year's masterpiece of a unicorn mural.
Dad, please.
Or when you realize that maybe you went too hard on the greige.
I miss color.
Or when you are sure you wanted a home gym, but your elliptical is currently hanging your laundry.
What about a home office?
Shop everything you need for your next phase with Valspar. Available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Podcast. I'm Connor Orr. And yes, we're going to talk about the Jets today, so feel free to turn your podcast apparatus off if that gives you a headache. I know it's shocking, right? Normally, it's the 2011 Jets that we like to bring up, but the 2023 Jets still have not consummated a trade for Aaron Rodgers, and I think that part of it's very interesting, but I also think the dynamic of the team as a whole, how they got here, how they built this roster, and really how good of a job they've done in spending all of their assets and utilizing all their picks. And so I have with me today an expert that's going to help us parse this out, Zach Rosenblatt from The Athletic. Zach covers the Jets for The Athletic. He's also covered the Giants for my alma mater, the Star Ledger in Newark, and he's also covered the Philadelphia Eagles. So I think this is going to be great. And yeah, let's bring him in. Zach, what's going on, buddy? How's it going?
Just waiting. That's all I've been doing is a lot of waiting.
You can never tell, like, from someone's Zoom camera setup what the situation is, but you have almost a Zach Taylor-esque just blank white wall behind you. And I like to think of anyone covering the Jets just sitting in these, like, isolated, like, white-walled rooms just being like, just please get this goddamn trade over with.
Well, to be honest, I moved into a new apartment a little bit before all this Rodgers stuff started happening. And then a combination of traveling, getting sick, and then just waiting for I was always worried the Rodgers news was going to come at any moment. So I couldn't deal with having all the stuff put up and all that. I don't know. I've been procrastinating it. And so I blame Aaron Rodgers for it is essentially the moral of the story.
People don't realize that when something is happening on a beat and you're a beat writer, I don't know. I remember, with the Giants, it was probably when Odell Beckham was going to play at that point because Tom Coughlin hated him and he wouldn't play. We didn't hate him. He was mad that he wouldn't play and Odell didn't want to play because his ankle hurt. But that was very banal compared to this. I guess when I covered the Jets, it was always 2010, 11. It was just it was multiple combustible things, but there wasn't this lingering. The Aaron Rodgers thing is just in the air constantly. And I'm wondering what's that like? Are you just all right, check the phone, take a few steps, check the phone, take a few steps. What's the day-to-day like right now?
I would say it was more stressful before he came out and said he wanted to play for the Jets because at that point you're waiting. Okay, are they just going to trade for him all of a sudden? Is he going to announce he's retiring and then the Jets have to pivot? So that was when I was stressing out every time I would get, a tweet alert from, the national guys or whatever. Or whatever it was, a text from a Jet source or something like that. There's less freaking out now. I think now it's just okay, at some point it's going to happen. The more stressful part is we're this stretch right now between, owners meetings and the draft, there's usually not that much that goes on. So reporters, some will take a vacation or two during this stretch in addition to the stretch between mini camp and training camp. And I have one planned for next week. I was just telling you about this before we started recording. And it was one that I booked like over a month ago, you know, thinking, all right, nothing will be happening in you know, middle of April, early April. And of course, this is still dragged on. I mean, it'll be 3 weeks, I think, on Wednesday since he announced that he wanted to play for the Jets. So it's now it's just a waiting game, and you just know it's going to happen at the most inconvenient possible time. That's just the way these things work, you know. You've been covering the NFL, let alone the Jets, for long enough to know it just happens when, like, you're doing something and, you know, you're like, oh, crap, I have to leave.
So I'll give you my worst story of that ever, but I want to know, where are you going in Florida and what are you going to be doing?
I'm going down to Boca Raton with my girlfriend. She has some friends that live down there.
Nice.
Yeah.
Is it just going to be like a beach thing? Like, what's on the schedule?
I don't know. I mean, I know that it's like Boca is known for like being a community where people go to retire to and stuff. But I guess some young people live down there now too. So I think they live in like a sort of community type thing. I don't know. I'm just kind of going with the flow. I just want to relax, chill by the beach. So Aaron Rodgers is going to probably he's probably going to get traded. Like, I get there on Thursday, maybe on Friday he'll get traded and ruin my whole weekend. But
so the worst one that ever happened timing wise for me was my wife had booked these like series. She wasn't my wife at that point, and I have no idea how we ended up getting it across the finish line after something like this. We had a series of dates planned, and like the first one, something crazy happened with the Jets. I had to cancel. Second one, something crazy with the Jets happened. Had to cancel. Third one, she's like, listen, this is it. Like, or else, you know, whatever. So I remember that morning, there was the Jets were holding a regional combine tryout at Florham Park. I had to go because there was a woman named Lauren Silberman that was going, and she was going to be the first woman ever to participate in a regional combine. She was going to try to kick. And there was no video evidence of her ever kicking. There was no evidence of her being like a college football player, like anything. So it was this big anticipation, curiosity. And I was like, okay. I told my wife, I was like, listen, I'm just going to go here real quick, watch her do this, write about it, and then go home. And then she gets there and insists on going last. And so like it's like hours of waiting. And then we're going back and forth between the field and Florham Park and the little media room and the field and the media room. And I'm like looking at the watch, and then it's slowly becoming apparent that like, I gotta bang this date. Like, it's not going to happen. And so I'm getting hollered at on the phone, and then she gets out there, and it turns out the whole thing is a publicity stunt. And so she like taps the ball with her foot and it dribbles like 2 feet. And then we're all just sitting there like mouths agape, like, what just happened? And that was by far the worst timing one. But with the Jets, it's always like a series of things. It's like, okay, all right, let's go out. And then we're going to sign Santonio Holmes. And then he's going to post a very granular picture back then on Twitter of him like chugging Cristal after you know, the phone quality is
yeah, yeah,
back then. But I don't know. What was your perception? Because you covered the Giants like me too, and yeah, you went to the Jets. You did it backwards. You went from sane to less sane. What was your perception of the Jets going into it, and how has that sort of answered the call?
That's interesting. You know, I mean, I'm friends with a lot of Jets supporters, so I like had like a somewhat idea that there was always just chaos. Like, I know they were always miserable kind of thing, because there's always just stuff happening. Like, just nothing normal ever happens with the Jets is kind of the going theme. And so that part of the job, I kind of expect. I think the fans are a little crazier than I realized. I would say like the Jets fans are like a passionate, raucous, angry bunch. Like, if you get them going, like they're like relentless. Like Giants fans. I would say Giants fans are mad if you like disrespect the brand of the Giants kind of thing, mm-hmm, more than like, they're mad at, you know. I think, you know, Giants fans were just like, we just want to win already. Like that was a big part of it. And also, you know, if you disrespect the brand kind of thing, because it's like they view them as, you know, one of the top franchises or whatever. Jets fans are just mad all the time because it's been so long since they did anything relevant. So they're just always mad. It's always everybody's fault. They're fun. They're very interested in everything you write and tweet and all that stuff, which is good. But it's definitely like they're an angry bunch for sure.
All right, so let's take Aaron Rodgers and let's lock him in a safe for a minute and just talk about the Jets offseason completely independent of Aaron Rodgers. I have a take, and I'm curious what your thought is on this, that I thought that Alan Lazard was a really good signing completely independent of Aaron Rodgers. Like, if you're going to run outside zone, you need blocking wide receivers, and there's only like people are like, oh, well, if you have a wide receiver, why don't you just make him block? Try that if you become a head coach of a team and be like, yes, yeah, go out there and scrap and fight for 65 snaps and then catch a pass every now and then. Alan Lazard will do that. I think he's valuable in that sense. I thought they had a good offseason. I didn't think it was just like capitulating to Aaron Rodgers, because even if he leaves you in the lurch at the last minute, like, your team still got better. But I don't know. What's your take on that?
Yeah, the Lazard thing, I think the part that people maybe don't realize is that he's pretty much a better version of what they had last year in Corey Davis, who was an important part of their offense. You know, the blocking part, like, that's the thing they always talked about first with Corey Davis, which I don't know if blocking's the first thing you want to hear about with the receiver, but but Corey's problem is he was injury prone and he's prone to drops. They still have him on the roster technically. I don't know how long that'll last. Maybe he's a part of the Rodgers trade, but so I think they view Lazard, it's a similar price, and I think they view him as a better player, more reliable guy. He's, again, a good run blocker, like you said. He's pretty reliable catching the ball. I think he's pretty healthy generally. He's bigger than Corey Davis, and he's been pretty good down, like, getting catches down the field too. So I think they're upgrading. Like, a lot of what they've done this offseason, at least offensively, is upgrading what they already had. So you look at Alan Lazard as a better Corey Davis, and I think they view Mecole Hardman as a better Braxton Berria. So in that way, they've upgraded their offense. And, you know, the areas you can – criticize them for is they haven't really done anything on the offensive line. And, you know, they added Chuck Clark from the Ravens. They traded for him. He should be pretty good. How he fits next to Jordan Whitehead, I'm not entirely sure, but still need to get a linebacker, and they're pretty depleted at defensive tackle next to Quinnen Williams. So there's still some stuff they have to do, but yeah, I think they're better right now than they were when the season ended, I would say.
I wonder if they'll miss someone like Sheldon Rankins, right? Who, I mean, that deal that they got him on was insane compared to, like, considering now he's making like 10 plus with the Texans on a 1 year deal, obviously. But I do think he was a guy who made some of that stuff work and maybe did some of the unsexy things that they needed him to do.
Yeah, he was great for them. He was great for media too. He's the media good guy this last year, so he's gonna be missed because everybody would go to him for literally any topic. But he's very underrated. He's a good run stopper. They thought they were gonna get Fletcher Cox, and I think that they probably were focused on Cox is why they maybe didn't go back to Rankins before they lost him. And they were trying to get Calais Campbell too before he went to the Falcons. I don't know if they were offering him enough. I know they offered Cox more than the Eagles did, but clearly he wasn't gonna leave them. So. I think they know that's a need. I think they're being a little patient with it now that, like, a lot of the top names are off the market. So whether it's, you know, you buy low on a guy that's lingering, or you draft somebody to put next to Quinnen, that's definitely a need. But yeah, it's when you have someone like Quinnen, I think the quality of the guy next to him, he doesn't necessarily need to be a Pro Bowler, because I think Quinnen's going to make anybody look better.
What do you think the plan is there? I mean, do you think getting someone, I've sensed that as a theme for a lot of teams this offseason. Like, you know, after the combine, I heard, like, okay, watch the Browns. They're going all in on Myles Garrett. They're going to just raid the defensive line market, and they're going to make life easier for him to destroy people. I would imagine that the Jets are trying to do something, or should be trying to do something similar, because they do have these talented guys. They have good edge rushers. They have good interior pressure, but you need the guys who are going to be able to make it work for you. So I don't know. Do you think that's still a big part of their plan?
Yeah, and Joe Douglas is always going to prioritize the D-line anyway. I think he's been doing that his whole career, and you learned that from the Ravens and Eagles when he was there. So, yeah, I think that's why you're seeing them going after guys like Cox and Campbell. That's why, you know, some Jets fans thought they might cut Carl Lawson this offseason because he saved like $15 million. But I think they view that he's a quality edge rusher, and if you cut him, you're probably going to replace him with somebody not as good, even if it's for less money. So they like rotating their defensive linemen, so that's why I'm surprised. All they've done is re-sign Solomon Thomas so far, and he's like probably the third guy. So I think they still have a few moves to make there. There still are some free agents. This market, free agency market's been kind of weird in general. I think a lot of players have been getting less money than they expected, so there's some guys still lingering around, and you haven't seen as many cap casualties and stuff like that. So I think they're going to be patient and think they're going to feel like they're going to find somebody eventually.
The defensive tackle market, though, is especially weird, right? Because you had like, you had 30-year-old guys that are getting like $22 million a year. And Douglas, I mean, we'll get to you. I want your take on him a little bit later, but I think he's done well in terms of the economics of the game, at least. Like, you know, you could say what you want about the Carl Lawson thing. I've heard everything under the sun, but the people who got pass rushers that year, I'm talking about Belichick and Matt Judon, Carl Lawson, and there's one more that I'm... the Bengals and... Trey Hendrickson, yeah. So they each got them for like $13, $14, $15, $16 million a year, somewhere in there. And then that next season, like that market took like a wide receiver like bump and just got out of control. And So I do think he's being smart. Like, yes, the Jets do need defensive tackle help, but this market is, for the top end guys, was kind of bananas a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Again, like Fletcher Cox got $10 million from the Eagles, which is a pretty reasonable rate, and they offered more than that. I think Jets fans would have been pretty thrilled if they got Fletcher Cox to put next to Quinnen Williams. But yeah, you know, and there's also the factor that he's about to pay Quinnen Williams quite a bit of money too, which is probably in the top process. He's going to make, you know, he might wind up being the second or third highest paid defensive tackle in the league. So, you know, all that's factoring in. I think Joe he's smartly being patient. I think Jets fans aren't as good about being patient. They've like wondered why nothing has happened, but I think pretty quickly, if they got a few guys, all of a sudden everybody would be pretty happy. You know, if they get a Beckham, if they get a Ben Jones, if they find a defensive tackle, whether it's in free agency or trades or something, I think they're going to be happy with this offseason. They're pretty clearly all in on trying to win right away with Aaron Rodgers. So I don't think spending is going to be an issue.
Do you have a favorite signing this offseason, whether it's under the radar or firmly on the radar?
For the Jets?
Yeah.
I haven't done enough to like get too enthused about anything, but I do think I like Chuck Clark trade was pretty, they only gave up, I think, a 7th round pick or something like that. And he's a pretty quality, you know, reliable starting safety. And that was a pretty big hole on their defense. So he'll be an upgrade over what LaMarcus Joyner brought for them last year.
So we're now at a point where I think we can start somewhat fairly evaluating Joe Douglas in totality as a general manager. My thought here is that he had, and I know a lot of GMs will say this, but I do think in the Jets case, it was true that he had a serious mess to clean up. Like the personnel was so substandard that was left behind during the Mike Maccagnan era that I think like you almost take the first 2 years and you just say, listen, you just got to get a professional team on the field. At this point, now that he's started to kind of get rolling on this, what's been your take on the Joe Douglas era? Do you think he's a good fit for the Jets moving forward? What do you think his kind of fatal flaws are? Like what's your take on him as a GM?
Yeah, I mean, to your initial point, it's undeniable how bad it was when he got here. And then if you look at it now, there's a reason why Aaron Rodgers is wanting to come to the Jets. It's because they have a playoff caliber roster, and Joe Douglas built that roster. So I think he absolutely deserves credit for that. I think he's been really pretty remarkable in trades. I think that's one area where he's probably one of the best GMs in the league. It's pretty rare you look at a trade that he did and feel like they didn't get the best value out of it, whether it's trading away a guy like Jamal Adams or, you know, trading for somebody. He's been very good at trades and waiver claims. You know, he got Quincy Williams off waivers. He got John Franklin Myers off waivers. I believe there's one more. That was Braxton Berrios he got off waivers. And these are all guys that got second contracts with the Jets. So that's pretty remarkable as well. I will say, though, his drafting, if you go and look at the classes, you know, it's obviously easy to do in retrospect. I think historically, everything Joe Douglas has done, I think at the time there was like you could justify it, which is a sign of a good GM, I think, but not all of it's worked out necessarily. And you look at 2020 draft is pretty miserable. That's the Mekhi Becton year.
Yeah.
2021 is starting to reach that level, if not worse, because of the Zach Wilson part of it, because he was a number one pick. You know, they have Elijah Vera Tucker, who's a good player, but, you know, they just traded away Elijah Moore after 2 years, essentially giving up on him. And Michael Carter, the running back's kind of not been as good as they thought he would be. So in a lot of ways, I think his 2022 draft with Sauce Gardner, Garrett Wilson, you know, Jermaine Johnson, Michael Clemens, Max Mitchell, all the guys, Breece Hall. Like that, I think that draft saved him in a lot of ways, because if that draft didn't pan out and they were really bad last year, he might not even still be in the job. So The drafting has left a little bit to be desired, though last year maybe redeems him a bit. Free agencies, you know, some guys have worked out, some haven't. DJ Reed was a home run last year. Lincoln Thompson struggled a little bit, and you kind of stuck with him, and they overpaid CJ Uzama a little bit, I think, to be a blocking tight end. So hasn't been perfect, but he's been pretty solid in free agency too. So I think compared to what some of the GMs, and, you know, I covered Dave Gettleman before this, like by comparison, Joe Douglas is Ozzie Newsome. So
the vindicated Dave Gettleman. Come on. Saquon Barkley is back on the franchise tag. Daniel Jones is making $40 million a year.
You could look that as, instead of vindication, you look that as he's screwing the Giants because now they have to overpay Daniel Jones.
I was imagining him just sitting there and just being like, see, you know.
He definitely was, yeah.
You think so?
Yeah, oh, absolutely, yeah.
It is funny, though, and like we'll deviate for just a second because you and I did both cover the Giants. And, you know, with Saquon in particular, I just kept wondering through the Jason Garrett era, like, why aren't they just throwing him checking the ball down to him and just getting him the ball in space? And then Brian Daboll does it and everyone's like, whoa, like, yes, this is a really good running back. Like, why are you forcing him to do things that he's bad at? The fact that that happened for so long was like coaching malpractice. It was borderline stunning.
The Jason Garrett era, they should like teach in school for like what? Everything it was the most boring, bland offense I've ever seen. They're scared to do anything. I think part of it came from the head coach too, because I think he was a pretty conservative minded person too, so maybe it's not all Garrett's fault, because you saw they fired Garrett and then, you know, Freddie Kitchens or whatever went in. It was still kind of the same thing. So you think about it, they kind of wasted 2 years of Daniel Jones. You know, maybe he would have gotten to this quicker if you just like, you know, figured out how to use him better and whatever.
I'm still a closeted Notre Dame fan, not as big as I used to be, but Jason Garrett obviously does color commentary for that, and he does halftime for NBC. And it always made me laugh that, you know, during the game, they kick it to Jason Garrett, and, you know, they're like, well, Jason, what would you do here in this situation? And I was like, why would we want to know that? Because, like, so let's do the opposite of that. And, like, you know, Tommy Reese, who is Notre Dame's offensive coordinator, is now the offensive coordinator at Alabama. Like, clearly he's doing all right. I think he knows what he's doing. Let's not ask Jason Garrett what his take is here.
I saw Jason Garrett. He was at owners meetings talking a lot of people up. I don't know if he's trying to find another way back or something.
I don't know. Okay. let's get back on track here. I don't know. Douglas, I hate the letter grade thing, but I'm like, I don't know. At this point, where would you put him? Like in the, I don't know. I'm not going to put words in your mouth. What would you give him as a letter grade so far as a GM?
I mean, until they show that they had a pretty terrible collapse at the end of last season. Mm-hmm. And I think he deserves dings for the Zach Wilson pick. Like, you know, whatever other teams thought about Zach Wilson, like the fact is you got it wrong, or at least you didn't put him in a position to succeed. So I think he definitely deserves dings for that. So I'd say probably B minus. I think you could argue like better based on like some of, like, especially the last year, he's been, you know, doing a masterclass in a way. But the overall, you know, resume and the fact that they still haven't had a winning record with him, and I think this year is going to really determine if they make the playoffs this year, Joe Douglas is going to be the GM for a long time. If they fall apart, then we might have a new GM next year.
How much pressure do you sense that there is? I mean, obviously going after Aaron Rodgers makes it seem like there is sort of an unofficial mandate from ownership. But do you think everyone's feeling it at this point? Like, you know, this has to materialize now.
I think they were feeling it before the Aaron Rodgers stuff.
Yeah.
Especially, they're almost like a victim of their early success last year, I think, because I don't think anybody thought they would be a team anybody was talking about for the playoffs, like at midseason, and they were 6-3. You know, they had a shot at they beat the Bills. People thought, you know, their division was in sights, and then they just completely fall apart. So I've always said, I think ending a season bad is much worse than starting a season bad, because everybody just remembers how you ended it. Like, nobody's going to talk about, you know, that you started well. Everybody's going to talk about how you lost 6 of your last 7 games or whatever it was. And so that's like on, you know, Woody Johnson, you know, is very impressionable. And I think he sees how they collapsed. He saw how they were literally just a quarterback away. I think that was pretty obvious. And I think they've been telling him that, you know, we're got us a, if you get us a quarterback, we are going to make the playoffs, Woody. And so the fact that, you know, I think that's how they've all kind of been pushing it. And, you know, they had to make some changes on the offensive coaching staff because of how miserable it was, which is often a precursor for things getting a lot worse. Because, you know, I think historically it doesn't work out very often if you have to fire your offensive coordinator.
Right.
Like pretty rarely. Like I covered the Eagles too. And I covered the Eagles. They, you know, Lurie forced, you know, Doug was calling the plays, but Lurie forced Doug to fire Mike Groh. And they replaced him with, like, you know, a collection of guys. And it was, like, not really clear who was running running things on offense. And it was a disaster. And Doug was fired, like, a year later. So, I don't know. I don't think, you know, you have Hackett, and then that's going to help them get Rodgers. So, ultimately, that was the right choice. But, yeah, if they don't make the playoffs, especially after spending what they're going to spend on Rodgers, and if they spend what they might spend on Beckham and all that stuff, like, it's going to be hard to convince – I don't know. Maybe Joe could survive it, but I don't think Salah would, I would say.
Do you get a sense of what it would be like to have Aaron Rodgers, Odell Beckham, Zach Wilson still in the locker room? Like, all this stuff happening at once? Like, I don't know. I've always been struck by Robert Salah as a guy who genuinely does care. I think he has his hand on the pulse of the emotional side of it. So, and my background in saying that is I covered the Jets when Rex Ryan was there, and I feel like similar vibes to 2011 when they said, okay, like, you know, we're going for it. Two AFC championships. Now it's the Super Bowl. And so let's get Plaxico Burress. Let's get Derek Mason. Let's get LeRon Landry. Remember the biceps guy? Like, yeah, like all these players. Let's get them all to Tim Tebow. And then, like, some days you're like looking around the locker room and you're like, where are we? Like, what is this place? And I just think I think Rex is a good person. I think he's a great guy. I think he probably underestimated how difficult that was going to be on a personality level. Do you think Salah has a sense of, all right, let's walk in, let's pretend I'm a beat reporter. I'm going to walk into this locker room and Aaron Rodgers is going to be over there and Zach Wilson's going to be next to Aaron Rodgers. Sure, he's not psyched. You got Odell Beckham over here. There's 50 cameras in there. Like, I don't know. That's going to be a pretty wild Wednesday, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. That's more of I'll know when I see. But they had a locker room that was pretty tight knit last year. A lot of young guys, right, and some veterans, and there is a risk of you bring in big personalities like that, you're risking a little, you know, that changing a little bit. And these guys who walk in and have never stepped foot in that locker room before, acting like they, you know, own the place or whatever. Like, I don't know that's going to happen. Maybe Odell will be a good teammate. Like, by all accounts, his teammates have all liked him in the past, even if he's been, like, publicly a distraction. You know, Rodgers, I think for the most part, is fine in the locker room, but then, you know, he might go and spout off on Pat McAfee on a Tuesday. So there's going to be a lot more eyes on this team, and they have some big personality on them. Garrett Wilson was not afraid to show how he felt last year, whether it was on the field or in interviews. Like, he would call people out, like, he was doing that as a rookie. And, you know, Sauce Gardner's not afraid to speak his mind, and CJ Mosley's in there. He's a veteran guy who kind of says what he's thinking. And so it you have a lot of different kind of personalities, and it's going to be interesting to see if, you know, Salah, you know, to his credit, as like you mentioned, he's been good. He weathered a lot of storms last year. He had a receiver request a trade during a winning streak, and it didn't blow the locker room up. Like the Zach Wilson stuff, everybody pretty much stayed together.
Right.
So he's shown that he can keep a team together. But when you have big personalities like that, like, it last year, it was all young guys. It was all, you know, Zach Wilson even was only in his second year. It was all, you know, 23-year-olds. And then he had some veterans to kind of help him. And it's a little different when you bring a 39-year-old Rodgers and, you know, however old Beckham is. And if they keep adding other guys, like, yeah, it's definitely going to be, it's going to be one of the more interesting parts of this whole thing.
Rodgers will be handing out big pharma pamphlets and everyone
will be awkward with his new boss, Woody Johnson, there, though.
So first question, precursor question, the Odell thing is real. Yes. Like, that's actually real.
Yeah. That I'd say they're the favorite to get him right now.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
I don't know what they've offered him or if they have or whatever, but my impression is more like it hasn't happened yet just because like they're trying to figure out the money side of it. It sounds like Odell's still asking for quite a bit. I don't think they can give him, I think Albert Breer reported like $15 million or something he was looking for. I don't think they're going to give him that.
Yeah. And I'll say this, and I, you know, you mentioned it too. I did a story on Odell the summer that he was signing his big contract. And I remember, you know, at the time, you have to go back. We're both in, you're in Jersey still, right?
Yep.
Yeah. You can never leave. I remember like walking the parking lot of Giants practice and training camp and interviewing like 10 people to try to get like kind of a straw poll. And it was 50-50. I mean, Giants fans just weren't sure what to make of him, but if you go in and then, you know, I had some time to talk to his teammates, all the receivers loved him, like absolutely loved him. And, you know, can he be a little bit silly and mercurial? Sure. Like, does he have access to hang out with the kinds of people that like are beyond our level of fame and comprehension? Sure. And, you know, that could be a little bit different, but I think to a person, you know, he's a fine guy and I think he'd fit in all right. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. That's always been the thing with him. I think people always seem to not realize that he is always popular with his teammates. Like, I'm sure there are guys that don't like how much attention he draws or whatever, but historically, guys, he was like voted like, you know, team. I think he's been a team captain in the past. I think, I don't know. Maybe I made that up. So I don't know. Maybe that, I think he's friends with Sauce Gardner already. And he's a guy that is also looked at as like from the younger players as like the guy they like looked up to when they were coming up through high school and college, which is crazy. Makes us feel old because I don't even know if he's 30 yet. but dude. Yeah, he's a guy that players in the league respect quite a bit, I think.
That hits hard a little bit.
Yeah.
How old are you?
32.
Oh, you're a baby. I'm just about to turn 35. so we'll close with this. The dynamics of the Rodgers situation, is it just a GM pissing contest at this point? Like I just want to come out of here looking like I have the best deal, and they're just sort of like waiting on that to happen?
Yeah, I think they're both, you know, I think for a while the Packers wanted to get a first round pick and the Jets were like, we're just not doing that, so we'll wait you out. I don't think they're asking for a first anymore. I think now the holdup, it's not a report or anything, but my impression would be that the Jets want protections in case Rodgers doesn't come back after 1 year.
Mm.
Whether that's, you know, a protected pick going to the Packers, or maybe the Jets get a pick if he doesn't play in 2024, like something like that. I think that's where we're at now. I feel like it's probably going to be the Jets give up a second round pick because they have two of them now. And then like a future pick. And I think maybe the sticking point is that they want to pick back in case he doesn't play again, kind of thing.
I had always thought, and I guess this isn't true because it seems like the sense is that they're not expecting him for OTAs anyway. Like they wouldn't have expected him to come for OTAs anyway. And I thought after watching him on McAfee, I thought this guy is on like the blood trail and he's so upset that he will show up for OTAs, be the consummate teammate, and then try every way, shape, and form to just end his career on such a high note in the biggest media market in the world and walk right into whatever, you know, TV job he wants to have. But it doesn't sound like he's like, you know, it doesn't sound like it's going that way. Like, it doesn't sound like there's a ton of pressure to be like, get me to OTAs, please.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I think the fact that they have Hackett in the building and they're going to construct the offense around what Rodgers likes to do, I don't think they're as worried about like, you know, him getting time in with the guys. I don't know. I think there is some value to again having some time for him to have chemistry with them, but he's also, it's not, I'm used to covering quarterbacks who like, you know, it's Zach Wilson, it's Daniel Jones, it's Carson Wentz, whatever it is, guys who, while maybe have some talent, that like they, like timing is a real thing you have to work on with these guys. Whereas Rodgers, I don't know, he probably can figure it out on the fly because that's how good he is. And that's kind of the thing, to go back to like the distraction stuff. When you're as good as Rodgers is, that's why everybody puts up with it. That's why he's as popular and famous and as you know, the Jets are going all out to get him. if they're winning and if he's playing well, like none of that's going to matter, and they'll be, everybody will love him. So
have you thought about your like opening move with Rodgers? Like I remember, you know, being in the Jets locker room or the Giants locker room and like, you know, some of the bigger guys and you're like, okay, what's, when I introduce myself, what's our thing in common that I can be like, hey, you know, we both understand this. But
I think he's a Star Wars fan. So maybe I'll go with that.
Nice.
Yeah.
So I had never, is it blasphemous to you to know that I've never seen only episode one? That's the only movie I've ever seen.
Like the prequel episode one, like the,
One with like, Jar Jar Binks that came out when I was in like sixth grade. That's the only one you've seen? So I hadn't seen any of them, and then I went to go
see
that.
You might be the only one in America who, out of, if you've only seen one of them, to only see that one. It's pretty interesting. It's like one of the worst ones.
I saw it as like at a kid's birthday party, and then I was like, oh, this is terrible. Like, why would I go see the other ones? But then my son has like a Darth Vader shirt. We got it from somewhere, whatever. So then someone thought he liked Star Wars. So for his birthday, someone got us all the Star Wars golden books, like the little kids books. Mm-hmm. And so they kind of really tightly summarize the entire movie. And so we got like all of them and I'm just like, oh, this is pretty cool. But now I kind of know what happens, like enough that I kind of get the gist of it. And I don't know, now I might give it a shot, but it's, you know,
they're pretty great. I think you should.
The only other thing I have to ask you about, you posted on Instagram the other day, and Twitter maybe, an iced coffee flight from Arizona that just looked unbelievable. And what's your what are your social media handles so that everyone knows?
Yeah, I'm at Zach Blatt on Twitter, Z-A-C-K, and at Zach Blatt NFL on Instagram. Yeah, it's a place in Phoenix called JoJo's, I believe. And it was very good. I'm a big iced coffee guy. I'm pro. Even when it's cold out, I'm fine. I have a nice coffee kind of thing. And I also like sweet kind. Like I like flavoring in mine kind of thing. So this one had a latte, a white mocha, I think a regular mocha, a cold brew, and a like caramel macchiato or something like that.
Damn.
They were good. They were all good. But after I was like wired.
I was going to say, like, how did you feel for the rest of the day?
They all were like not that big, but it adds up to like a decent amount of coffee. And I'm like, if we were talking like Starbucks sizes, I probably get a grande and I don't always finish it even kind of thing is how I drink coffee a lot of times. Okay. And so that was a lot. Like I didn't even finish all of it, but I drank enough of it that I was like the rest of the day. I was like, oh my God, that was, it was one of the things that I enjoyed it, but I don't think I would need to do that again if I went back there kind of thing.
You would only need to do that again if and when Aaron Rodgers signs his contract, because you'd be up all night writing for The Athletic, hopefully coming back and podcasting with us on the MMQB. Thanks so much, man. This was great.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Connor. I appreciate it.
The MMQB NFL podcast is produced by Shelby Royston. Mark Mravick is the emeritus editor of the MMQB. Super Bowl champion Andy Benoit of the Los Angeles Rams and Rec League basketball three-point assassin Gary Gramling are the founders of the MMQB NFL podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed on Apple Podcasts, and once you do, leave a rating and review because it really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
This Labor Day at Lowe's, shop member-only doorbuster deals for a limited time. Save $50 on an Ego string trimmer, now $169. Plus, get 50% off select Holland pavers. Not a rewards member? Sign up for free today. But hurry, Labor Day doorbuster deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 9/1 while supplies last. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.